Hello, it's Wednesday 19th of August. I'm Hannah Pearson from Pear Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bowerman from Check In Asia.
On this week's show, we're checking the progress of domestic travel across the region.
Yes, with borders still mostly closed, we're talking travel within borders. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. Well, almost 8 months into the pandemic, inbound and outbound travel in Southeast Asia still seems some way off. We read about potential travel bubbles and green lanes, but very little progress seems to be getting made.
Yeah, here in Malaysia, the causeway separating Malaysia from Singapore was reopened on Monday after being slammed shut for five whole months. Mm. But it's primarily for cross-border commuters and essential business trips and is extremely well guarded. So leisure travel at the moment remains off the agenda, it seems. But it does offer hope for bigger things on the horizon, do you think, Hannah?
Yes, I think overall it does, right? I think it can only be a good thing that two ASEAN nations are finally opening borders with one another, albeit, like you say, in a very limited and a very controlled way. But I am still bullish that Malaysia and Singapore will open to one another for leisure travel this year.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think yesterday this opening of, well, for transit travel through Changi, from Malaysia, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, and Indonesia. I think there's five Southeast Asian countries can now transit through Changi. Okay, there's not going to be huge traffic at the moment, but it does presage, hopefully, some degree of travel bubble movement, do you think?
Hopefully.
We hope so, right?
We really hope so,
it's got to that point.
We're going to take the good signs, aren't we?
So today we're going to look at domestic tourism, Hannah, and how that's actually developed, I guess, over the last couple of months.
Yeah.
But before we start, I just wanted to look at some airline capacity statistics, because
although
we're reading quite a lot about how domestic tourism is starting to grow a little bit and it's starting to plug a little bit of the gap, that gap is still huge.
Yes.
And some of the figures that were published this week kind of show that.
Mm. Go on then.
So figures from OAG show that scheduled airline capacity across Southeast Asia up to this week is still 65% less. Now, of all the 10 regions in the world that are covered by these statistics, only two regions actually have a higher figure. So they're worse off in terms of recovery than that. And one is South America and the other is Southwest Pacific.
Mm.
So although we believe that Southeast Asia is this dynamic region, you know, there isn't much air travel at the moment. That's largely because the borders are closed.
Yeah.
And even in the larger countries, so Indonesia, for example, you know, there is some domestic traffic going on.
Yeah.
It is a small fraction of what this region actually needs to recover.
Gosh, that's gloomy.
Yeah. So Indonesia at the moment is the only country in the world's top 10 for scheduled air capacity on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
And it's currently 38.1% down on what it was in January.
Mm.
Now, Vietnam used to be in that top 10 up until about a month ago.
Yeah.
So Indonesia at the moment is holding holding the fort. But I think that does show that for the rest of the region, air travel is way, way down.
Yeah, that's really quite bleak.
Okay, so let's cheer ourselves up a little more. Let's go a little bit brighter. So where should we start on our journey? Should we start in Cambodia?
Yes, let's start in Cambodia.
Let's have a look at domestic travel in Cambodia. Yes. Largely because they're currently having a holiday.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? They have their 5-day holiday at the moment, which is the replacement for the Khmer New Year, which was cancelled. I think that was scheduled for April, I think,
mid-April.
And then postponed till now. But it seems to be going pretty well there. I mean, we've had a lot of news headlines coming out saying that occupancy levels at hotels are reaching, 95% in Siem Reap. 557 tourism resorts nationwide are open for nationals, but also, you know, foreign tourists who are also living in Cambodia too. But they are all taking on these, you know, preventative measures.
And one of the factors that I saw that was published in local media is actually there's a little bit of a fear factor about this in Phnom Penh.
Mm.
Because normally for the Khmer New Year holiday, Phnom Penh itself empties out because everybody goes back to the regions or takes a holiday in the regions.
Yeah.
Well, Phnom Penh has been trying to recover itself, its own industry.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not going to have much traffic for the next 5 days for sure.
Yes.
So there was worry there that that could have longer impact, longer ramifications.
That's interesting, isn't it? So it's not necessarily all cities that are going to benefit from that, are they?
No. And then there was a separation out of what this holiday actually means.
Mm.
Local media also interviewed a lot of local people that whether they were or weren't going to going to travel during this replacement holiday.
Yeah.
And some people said they would travel, but they're only using it really as a getaway, as a break.
Yeah.
And because they said that, you know, this isn't Khmer New Year.
Yes.
And you can't pretend that it is. So there's this sort of separation of what the symbolic meaning of the holiday and actually just being able to take a break. Others said that, you know, they've had a long break because there has been just basically no travel and tourism activity.
True.
So they don't even want to take a break. They just want to stay home.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a tricky, tricky period.
It is. I mean, and you've also got destinations like Siem Reap who are really trying to push. So I was reading that Siem Reap are going to hold different kind of events to really stimulate domestic tourists to come and visit and show them, you know, that I guess the city is still a stimulating place to be and a fun place to be and try and attract domestic tourists that way to visit by offering something a little bit different to the usual. I think they even had things like floating markets.
Yeah. I mean, the problem, one of the problems Cambodia has alongside other countries, just a small population, actually recovering tourism spending with such a small population, it's going to rely on these public holidays and weekends. Which brings us, let's move on to Indonesia, which has a much larger population. The population has just reached 268 million, apparently, according to official census figures. But the focus of tourism there, and it's a big story across our region, is Bali.
Yes.
Now, is Bali going to reopen to international tourism?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be from September the 11th.
Yes.
Domestic tourism has been permitted since the 31st of July. And this has been going back and forth. It does look at the moment as though that's going to be postponed, largely because it's actually the Balinese governor that actually set this reopening date rather than the Indonesian federal government.
Yes. And we keep seeing this again and again across Southeast Asia where there is this kind of clash between state governments and the federal government. Even in Malaysia this week, we've had, I think, the state government, Penang government, deciding to ban inbound medical tourism, whereas the federal government says, actually, you shouldn't be able to ban that. So this clash between local governments and federal governments is not really helping.
No, it's really not. Is it? No. And there was a rather mournful comment this week from the head of the Indonesian Hotel and Restaurant Association, who confirmed that the reopening will be delayed for Bali. And he said, we will try and focus on domestic tourists to survive until December, even though the challenges are going to be very tough.
It's just, how much longer can they go?
Well, he added that hotel occupancy in Bali is still averaging only around 9%. And it was 5% before the repermitting of domestic tourists. So it hasn't actually boosted that much.
4%. It's not going to go very far.
Yeah, and he said there's very little money for tourism players to earn from domestic travel.
Yeah, absolutely. Margins are so low.
And I was looking back, I wrote an article about the situation in Bali a week or so ago. And I actually looked at the statistics for Bali from last year. Now, last year, 6.86 million international passengers were received at the airport in Bali, compared to 4.97 million domestic tourists. So those numbers seem quite similar.
Yeah.
But then you actually delve down a little bit deeper. The figures for international arrivals increased 12% year on year. And the figures for domestic arrivals actually fell 10%. So domestic travel to Bali was actually dropping. I mean, there are a number of reasons for that. We are facing a reset. So, and it is really the only destination that Indonesian travellers can go to right now.
Yeah.
But you just wonder whether its appeal has retained among domestic travellers.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, and the government itself, even up to this point, has been trying to promote what they call the 10 new Balis, haven't they? They're trying to really promote both domestic and international tourists to visit places that aren't Bali. So now that they've said, oh, hang on, actually, maybe let's keep the borders closed. And are they really going to expect everybody to travel to Bali after they have been saying for the last few months, hey, there are places other than Bali? I'm not sure.
It's one of the conundrums that the pandemic has thrown up. It really is. Which moves us on to Thailand. Let's talk about Thailand. There's always plenty to talk about when we get to Thailand.
Yeah, Thailand is never boring, is it? So I think the most crucial thing that's coming up about Thailand right now is just its economy, isn't it? It had a 12.2% drop in GDP for Q2. It's its lowest in 22 years. You have some political unrest there now as well, some student protests.
Yeah.
There's just the feeling, I think, of desperation amongst tourism players that things are not picking up.
Yeah, because tourism is so important to the economy.
Yeah.
We were talking, when we were preparing for the show, about some of the airline reporting that we've been receiving. And you look at some of the airlines in Thailand, that they are reporting massive, massive losses.
Yeah.
And one of the ones that I thought was most interesting is Bangkok Airways, which suspended all of its flights between 7th of April and 15th of May.
Yeah.
And then it was started renewing on domestic flights.
Yeah.
but its passengers have fallen 97.8% year on year during the second quarter. Now, that in itself is probably not surprising for many of the airlines around the world, but when you drill down a little bit further again, you find out that 80% of that airline's passengers are code share with other airlines. So that shows the importance of inbound traffic to the country.
Yeah.
80%, 8 out of 10, every, 8 out of 10 passengers are a code share passenger.
Yeah.
It's going to be impossible for domestic to make even a dent on that.
Yeah, and we came across a really interesting article. We'll drop it in the show notes as well, with an analyst who came out this week and actually said that even if every Thai person spent all of their 2019 outbound spend this year, the country would still be short of $60 billion to make it up to what the inbound spend is normally.
Yeah, yeah. Even the Tourism Authority of Thailand is saying that the biggest estimate it can hope for this year is 6.7 million inbound visitors. And that compares to what, 40 million, more or less 40 million last year. Now, that's a huge drop, not just in numbers of people, but in revenues and the ability to retain jobs.
Yeah, exactly. And there was an interesting survey that came out with Agoda at the end of July, and it had interviewed Thai travellers. And actually, they said that only 58% of them were ready to travel. Right? Only 58% out of all of them just travel domestically. This is not necessarily travelling internationally, but just, I think that also rings some alarm bells.
It really does. And there's also surveys that you see in terms of, in particular parts of Thailand, where there's an unwillingness to welcome back international travellers as well. So the whole recovery there is going to be quite difficult. But if Thais themselves are less willing to travel, there's a less willingness to allow back international tourists. And the government itself has said it's progressing very, very cautiously.
Yes.
Perhaps there may not be any inbound travel of any note until next year.
No, I mean, in domestic travel, it is picking up, and you know, I think as we were saying in our islands pod, there, you know, is this increase, especially over long weekends, and you know, Thailand have announced another 4-day weekend coming up in September, which is more of the Songkran replacement holidays. But only 1 million rooms have been booked out of a total of 5 million on this government stimulus program, and this is where the travel is very, very heavily subsidized.
Yeah. And there's also a bit of a polarization in terms of where Thai travellers prefer to go, I suppose international travellers prefer to go. So, for example, two good examples are Phuket and Koh Samui. Now, you often read a lot in the media right now that Thai tourists are saying, particularly Phuket, is just too expensive. It's been overpriced. But even there, I think it's only something like 30% of hotels in Phuket are actually currently open.
Yeah.
So it can't, you know, the actual capacity to welcome visitors is much lower than it was before.
Yeah, and of course, you know, if the number of hotels is lower, then it's also the number of choices in terms of different budgets is lower as well.
Yeah.
So it might just be that travellers can't find the hotel for their tastes, even, or perhaps the availability on the dates that they want to book.
And I mean, we did notice at the beginning of the reopening towards domestic tourists that there was a real popularity for drivable destinations.
Yes.
Places that were within striking range of Bangkok, that was noticeable.
Yeah, and that kind of plays out with the Agoda survey as well, where Hua Hin was one of the more popular destinations that Thai travellers were looking to travel to.
So let's move on.
Mm.
Neighbouring country, Myanmar.
Myanmar.
What's the situation there? Not much is happening there, is it?
So Myanmar's a tricky one, really. So you have, in theory, a country that is open for domestic travel, but in practicality, it isn't. We've had, you know, stories in the press coming out of people travelling for, again, these long weekends and finding that they don't have the correct papers because it's still quite complicated papers for interprovincial travel. And that a lot of the key monuments, the Myanmar government actually decided to close before the public holidays because they were worried of a kind of resurgence of cases. And this, I think, probably came about the same time as the second wave in Vietnam. So probably saw that and started to feel worried about the holidays too. But I think right now it's just a very, very tricky, complicated situation for Myanmar tourism businesses to try to survive in. So that's just going to be a really tricky one for Myanmar to kind of find its way out of.
It's an extraordinary shaped country as well. And we've seen, as you mentioned there, Hannah, there have been restrictions traveling interstate through the region. I think some of that has been lifted now. There's But I mean, it was quite late also actually opening up some of the hotels and the tourism facilities, as you mentioned. They had to go through very, very strict protocols,
yep.
Some of the strictest in the region, just to reopen,
yes.
Which has made the whole process a little bit slower.
Yes.
But as it currently stands, international flights are not permitted until the 31st of August.
Yes,
that's as it
correct.
Currently stands,
yeah.
But there's every indication that may be extended a little bit further.
Yeah, I imagine.
Imagine so, yeah. Because probably for the reason the country isn't really ready yet to welcome back.
Yeah, exactly.
Visitors.
If they feel like they haven't got the processes in place, then you would be very reluctant to open up the country, I think.
Agreed. So from there, we will move on to our home country,
Malaysia.
What's happening here, Hannah?
Well, I mean, we've had some good news from consumer surveys. So about 29% of Malaysians have already started travelling to other states, but there's still a 44% who have not travelled and are not planning to travel for a while. So 44%, I would argue, is still quite a...
It's a high number.
It's a pretty high number. But one thing that made me smile, actually, out of this survey was the number of people who talked about the food being their top reason to select a destination. I loved that. And we always, Malaysians always joke, you know, food is the number one thing. It's all about the makan.
Yeah.
I think Singaporeans do, probably all of Southeast Asia, let's say,
yeah.
Really. But yeah, it made me smile to see really 50% of Malaysians saying they're selecting a destination based on food. And one of their top destinations to visit was Penang. And of course, great food in Penang. So
yeah.
You can
yeah.
see why.
I was in Penang a couple of weekends ago. And you can really see, I was talking to the general manager of our hotel, and he said there is a huge difference between the weekends and the weekdays,
yes.
Particularly because the hotel I was staying with does do quite a lot of like group training, business events during the week. And those aren't happening at the moment. Although while I was there, I did see some people that were scoping out the facilities, but I guess they're negotiating pretty hard on the rates that they would pay. But at the weekend, the hotel rates were quite high, but they have definitely cut down on staff. Mm. You can see that.
Yeah, I mean, that being said, you know, like you said, Penang occupancy rates, the government is coming out and saying they've seen occupancy rates of between 78 to 100%. I do wonder if that's probably
I think that's
weekend
on weekends.
Certainly.
I think that's absolutely on weekends. I think the weekdays are a lot lower. But the issue with that is, you know, those are the sort of marquee destinations. So Langkawi, Penang, Malacca, maybe a couple of the islands, although some of the East Coast islands, you won't be able to travel to those quite soon because the rainy season is coming.
Mm.
So it really makes it pretty much mainland travel only. Destinations like Ipoh, which I was at as well, you know, that's been very hardly hit. You can see that.
Yeah.
This is we have a couple of public holidays coming up.
Yeah, we've got
which
quite
tends
a few.
To stimulate travel.
Yeah. But another thing that's putting a dampener on domestic travel here is inter-travel restrictions again. So you've got Sarawak State, which is in Borneo, and they've imposed compulsory screening for Malaysians entering the state. So it doesn't matter if you are Malaysian, but if you're from a different state, you're from across the sea or even from Sabah, neighbouring states, no, you've still got to be screened. And if you're travelling to the interior, you're going to have to be quarantined as well. And that just does not help the tourism industry there, because obviously a lot of people who would be travelling to these kind of states are probably from Kuala Lumpur. I would think most travellers from Western Peninsula Malaysia wouldn't want to take that risk right now on booking a holiday to Borneo, whether it's Sabah or Sarawak, just from the fear that this actually, they might have to do that. They might have to be quarantined. They might have to go for this screening just to take a domestic trip. And these states, especially Sabah, are so reliant on tourism that it's going to have a massive impact. They really can't benefit from domestic tourism at all right now.
Another thing that in Peninsula Malaysia we have is pretty good road system. The infrastructure is pretty good.
True.
So you are seeing more travellers on the roads.
Yeah.
The airlines are trying to put a bit more flight capacity back into the system, but we're not quite clear what the demand is.
Mm.
But you do see a lot. We drove up to Penang. We drove up to Ipoh. You do see a lot of cars on the road. And so we had a good insight from Sarah Iqmal, who's the business development manager for SCM Travel Solutions here in KL.
Mm.
And she was talking about business travel. But she said, I work with business travel managers, and self-drive is definitely preferred right now. Many companies have revised their travel policies to reflect this.
Mm.
Traveling for work domestically anyway is happening. It's just that people currently aren't flying anymore unless it's between East and West Malaysia.
Interesting.
And that's for business travel.
Yeah, and so with the reduction of flights anyhow now between West and East Malaysia, that's going to impact that as well, isn't it?
It's going to impact that too.
So should we move to Vietnam?
Yeah, let's move on to Vietnam, where things were looking incredibly positive until about a month ago.
So Vietnam was one of those countries which had almost recovered its domestic flight load factors. And then, of course, the second wave hit. Flights to Da Nang, like we were saying, were stopped. And just the whole appetite for travel has completely disappeared.
Yeah, it really has. So there are a couple of issues that have emerged in terms of domestic travel. I mean, it seems cancellations are just huge at the moment across the country.
Yeah,
people are very fearful to travel.
Yeah.
They're tending to stay wherever they are. Flights capacities have fallen off the scale. You know, they were rising. They were going back towards some degree of normality. But I found an interesting statistic that the Vietnam Railways posted its first half year loss for a decade just because of demand. It also had to stop a lot of its services during the lockdown period.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually made a loss during the first half year of 304 billion Vietnamese dong, which is about US dollar 13 million. But that compares to a pre-tax profit of 165 billion Vietnamese dong for the first half of 2019.
Yeah.
So the impact is evident.
It is. You know, and like you say, we've seen, you know, thousands of tours cancelled. And I think this is just hitting Vietnamese tourism industry doubly hard. So they already had to go through one round of this and one round of the cancellations. Now they're having to endure the second round of all of these cancellations as well, and this might just be the nail in the coffin for some of them.
Well, it's a good point. Local media reported yesterday that hotels in Ho Chi Minh City, between the 3-star and 5-star categories, up to 90% of total staff in those hotels are currently on unpaid leave.
Yeah, but, you know, some airlines are still making, you know, trying to make the best of it. So you've got Vietjet, who are starting to sell for Tet, which is Vietnamese New Year already.
Yep.
So they're trying to promote for that. They're offering things like free baggage. But I think on the whole, the industry is going to have to really fight to get back to where it was, you know, just a month ago. And that's going to take a while to really recover again.
Yeah, another element that was reported in local media yesterday was there was, since Vietnam had sort of moved through this period where it was seemingly COVID-free for 99 days, a lot of hotels had started to see an upswing in bookings or provisional bookings for weddings and events.
Ah.
Now they're all being cancelled again.
Yeah, it's just
and that's revenue you've got to give back, even if it's only deposits. That's got to be refunded.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. But you know what? I still think that Vietnam is still going to bounce back out of this, actually.
You would think it has good opportunities simply because they do seem to have nailed the containment of this outbreak pretty well.
Yes.
They've been incredibly proactive.
Yeah.
But you do wonder how long it's going to be before international borders will be open there, because they're going to be incredibly wary of that.
Yes, definitely.
So it's going to rely on either a domestic recovery or limited bubbles within ASEAN.
And so last country then is our near neighbour, Singapore. So what's Singapore been up to?
Well, Singapore's an interesting country when you're talking about domestic travel, isn't it? Because it's a city-state. And so you don't really expect, ordinarily, there would be much domestic travel. And now it's trying quite hard. It's produced this staycation program.
Yes.
Which has had some results, you know, and it's trying to stimulate some demand for the hotel sector.
Yeah.
And then last week there was an announcement of, well, quite a big subsidy for travellers to explore a little bit more of the city.
Right, 320 million Sing dollars. That's nothing to be sneezed at. So they're going to be tourism vouchers that they're going to give out. They haven't quite defined how exactly that's going to work yet or what kind of restrictions would be placed on it. But certainly that's going to go some way to stimulate domestic tourism. And, you know, tourism in Singapore isn't cheap, is it? Hotel stays in Singapore aren't cheap, and particularly if you're...
Restaurants aren't cheap.
Yeah, restaurants aren't cheap. If you're from like a low to middle income family in Singapore, a lot of hotels are going to be out of your budget. So it would be interesting to see how this can support that. Perhaps it's going to be aimed at, you know, more of the lower star category hotels. Who knows?
But there's certainly going to need to be some added value in terms of what's offered for that stay, you know, whether it's a package that includes dinner and breakfast or lunches or something like that, because otherwise the costs just start to escalate quite quickly.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and they're trying to be very creative in thinking about how to promote the city-state as well. So Deputy PM, I think, was doing a live Facebook broadcast over the weekend showcasing Singapore's East Coast and telling people that they should go and visit and the hidden gems there. Singapore Tourism Board are holding a food festival over the last two weekends of August, and they've got online masterclasses and virtual food tours and food ordering from the participating merchants. So I think it should be quite an interactive experience. So it would be interesting to see how those really work out you know, being geared towards domestic tourists rather than international ones.
Yeah. I think the pent-up demand to travel to Singapore once it does open its borders will be there.
Mm.
I mean, there was a live stream, Trip.com did a live stream booking of Singaporean hotels from China.
Yeah.
And there was clearly demand to travel to Singapore. But it just depends on how long those borders will stay closed.
Yeah.
It has a very small population, a very small landmass to actually develop domestic tourism of any kind.
Yes.
And it's basically just trying to keep those hotels and those tour operators alive so that when the demand returns, they're in a place to be able to.
Exactly. I mean, and Singapore government just announced that they're going to extend for 7 months a job support scheme. So they'll pay 50% of tourism workers' salaries for another 7 months, which is a good thing. Again, 50%. I mean, yes, it is for a good length of time. I just don't know whether tourism owners at this point see the value even of having staff, right? A lot of them are pretty much in hibernation right now. So they're thinking, oh, I have to pay 50% of staff.
Yeah. I think the sentiment in Singapore was pretty much summed up by the trade and industry minister the other day, who said, to survive, we have to keep our borders open. To thrive, we have to connect to the world. To prosper, we have to be the hub of the global economy. And Singapore's always really, that's been its focus, hasn't it? I mean, it developed Changi Airport long before airports in this region were of that standard.
Yes.
It's always been pretty forward-thinking in terms of the way that it promotes the assets that it has. And also, its outbound market has been very, very strong.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, sometimes I just wonder whether instead of all of these incentives, they should just give the money directly to the tourism businesses and be done with it. But I don't know how far that money would go.
It's an interesting idea. Yeah, we'd certainly go straight to their pockets and help keep them, keep them funded.
But maybe not an industry multiplier, but I don't know.
Tricky times.
It is. But that brings us to the end of this week's Domestic Travel Special Edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show. We hope you enjoyed the show. And as always, we'd love to read your comments and feedback on anything we've said or missed out by email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or via our Facebook page at the SEA Travel Show. Also, look out for our daily travel and tourism insights, opinions, and podcast news on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show and on Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
In the meantime, you can catch up with all our previous episodes of the Southeast Asia Travel Show and the Friday Rewind Show on our website, theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify and Google Podcasts. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on either one. And we're also now on the Pocket Casts, Podchaser, and Stitcher. Pod apps.
Lots of them. So that's a wrap for this week. We're off to book summer getaways in Malaysia, and we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.
Yeah, bye-bye.